I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Proposal for Peace. Prime Minister Netanyahu weighs in on a possible ceasefire with Hezbollah amid another round of Israeli airstrikes in central Beirut. Watch your step. Why Pope Francis is speaking out against the use of the anti-personnel landmines recently approved by the Biden administration for use by Ukraine. Weeks of Honor. We talked to Deacon Harold Burke Sivers on the significance and tradition behind Black Catholic History Month. Plus, highly decorated. Learn all about this year's White House Christmas tree. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Lawrence of Port Maurice. Our top story tonight, we begin in the Middle East, where Israel's Secretary Cabinet has voted in favor of a ceasefire deal with Hezbollah militants in Lebanon.
The duration of the ceasefire depends on what will happen in Lebanon. In full understanding with the United States, we maintain full military freedom of action. If Hezbollah violates the agreement and tries to arm itself, we will attack. If it tries to renew terrorist infrastructure near the border, we will attack.
Netanyahu added the deal would further isolate Hamas in Gaza and would allow Israel to turn its focus to Iran. The hours leading up to the cabinet meeting, Israel stepped up its bombardment of Lebanon, killing dozens of people. President Joe Biden also weighed in on the ceasefire.
I directed my team to work with the governments of Israel and Lebanon to forge a ceasefire, to bring a conflict between Israel and Hezbollah to a close. Under the deal reached today, effective at 4 a.m. tomorrow local time, the fighting across the Lebanese-Israeli border will end. This is designed to be a permanent cessation of hostilities.
Add the reaction to the ceasefire agreement coming from Capitol Hill from the senior Jewish lawmaker in Congress. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer put out a statement saying in part, quote, this is a good deal for Israel and the region that will ensure Israelis can return to their homes in the north and protects Israel's security against Iranian-backed terrorist group Hezbollah. Well, earlier in the day, the European Union's top diplomat said there were no excuses for Israel to refuse to implement a ceasefire with Hezbollah. The outgoing EU policy chief said all of Israel's concerns had been addressed in the deal. He also warned that if the ceasefire was not implemented, Lebanon would fall apart. And joining us now to talk more about the latest developments is Ambassador Jim Jeffrey, former ambassador to Turkey and chair of the Mideast Department at the Wilson Center. Mr. Ambassador, good to be with you today. A lot to unpack here. But first, your thoughts on the deal that was reached today.
Thank you, Tracy. First of all, this is a huge step forward for a new, more stable, secure Middle East. Second, this has only been made possible because of a dramatic Israeli military success, primarily defeating Hezbollah, but also the overall Israeli campaign since it was struck so terribly on the 7th of October over a year ago. This agreement is essentially a reinforcement of the original agreement from 2006, which I was involved in up in the UN, Resolution 1701, that was supposed to bring peace to southern Lebanon by having the Hezbollah terrorist faction supported by Iran withdraw north of the Litani River. They never did. This time, they are under real pressure to do so. They have agreed to do so, and Israel will have the right to respond if they do not.
Well, President Biden, as you know, said today the deal was, quote, designed to be a permanent cessation of hostilities. Yet, as we know, this is only a temporary ceasefire. That said, do you think there is a chance that Hezbollah could violate the ceasefire?
There is a chance, but I want to look on the more positive side. There's also a chance that this temporary ceasefire can last. The Korean temporary ceasefire from 1953 is still in effect over 70 years later. So I'm pretty optimistic that this can, because we know that the Israeli people, after what they went through, will never again allow terrorists on their border. Two, we also know, we have seen this dramatically, they have the military capability to defeat, with United States support, anyone in the region.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are wondering this, Mr. Ambassador, you know, why do you think Israel launched one last strike when they knew that a ceasefire deal was in the works? What do you think was the strategy there?
My first ceasefire in Vietnam, 1973, 20 minutes before the ceasefire began, the Viet Cong were shelling the hell out of us. This is what happens in war.
Yeah. And I know the ceasefire only applies to Israel and Hezbollah and not the fighting between Israel and Hamas. However, could this signal a potential ceasefire between Israel and Hamas down the road?
Absolutely. Remember, this is all one campaign. And it's only one chapter in a campaign that Iran and its proxies began 20 years ago, marching through states like Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, and the Gaza, where Hezbollah took over in 2007. And having defeated one of the axis of evil, if you could call them, Hezbollah, this means Hamas is ever more isolated because Israel has essentially defeated Iran in the missile exchanges we saw last month. So Israel has achieved most of its military objectives in Gaza. The human suffering is terrible. And I think we are going to see rapid movement, at least I hope, towards a ceasefire there as well. This is great news, not just for the people of Lebanon, but for the people of Gaza, and most of all for the Israeli people and the people of the region.
Yeah, absolutely. And bigger picture here, what does this mean overall for the Middle East?
What it means is that the counteroffensive against Iran, we saw this in the last administration, or rather the Trump administration, the last administration still, with the Abraham Accords between Israel and many Arab states. Then the very powerful President Biden's support for Israel in its campaign against Hamas, against Hezbollah, against Iran. And now this is opening the door for President Trump and his people, who are very focused on this and hoping to build on it and to move in and to solidify what seems to be a real movement towards peace.
Ambassador Jeffrey, thank you so much, sir, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Paul Francis is speaking out against the use of anti-personnel landmines just days after the Biden administration approved their use by Ukraine. In a message to a conference in Cambodia on the use of landmines, the Holy Father says their existence is a sign of a failure to live in unity with one another. The U.S. recently approved Ukraine's use of anti-personnel mines in Russia. The international community has long condemned the weapons, saying they endanger innocent civilians. A president-elect Donald Trump does not take office until next year, but some of his policy proposals are already making waves. He threatens to impose tariffs on China, Mexico, and Canada. The move is already facing pushback and could affect the prices that you pay. President-elect Donald Trump broke the news on Truth Social, writing, "As one of my many first executive orders, I will sign all necessary documents to charge Mexico and Canada a 25% tariff on all products coming into the United States and its ridiculous open borders. This tariff will remain in effect until such time as drugs, in particular fentanyl, and all illegal aliens stop this invasion of our country." A former Trump communications director calls it a pro-Americans and pro-jobs stance.
I think this is a warning shot. I love that all gas, no brakes. I think the American people voted for that, and that's what they're going to get right out of the gates with Donald Trump.
But one lawmaker warns the tariffs could lead to higher prices for American consumers.
I think the reaction is going to be hugely negative, and I think he's going to have to live with those consequences and be held accountable.
The president of Mexico is already threatening to retaliate. She says each American tariff would be followed by one from Mexico, putting businesses on both sides of the border at risk. Trump also singled out China, saying the country never followed through on its promise to curb the flow of drugs. He writes, "Until such time as they stop, we will be charging China an additional 10% tariff." China did not immediately respond, except to say, "We have an open attitude toward dialogue and communication." But Ian Bremmer, who follows these issues, says China is deeply concerned about the impact more tariffs would have on its economy.
You're going to see offers from these countries. Why wouldn't Trump, in the weeks before he's president, throw that out when they have an opportunity before he's president to say, no, please, here's what we'll do for you? I think he's smoking them out a little bit.
Well, Texas is quickly becoming the blueprint for how incoming Trump officials expect to address security issues at the U.S. border. Today, incoming border czar Catholic Tom Homan went to Texas with Republican Governor Greg Abbott to assess the situation firsthand.
You can't have strong national security if you don't have border security. We need to know who's coming in, what's coming in, where it's coming in, why it's coming in, all those questions.
Other two served meals to Texas National Guard soldiers and Texas Department of Public Safety troopers. They began the day in Eagle Pass, an important border town for the state's Operation Lone Star program, which deals with illegal immigration and drug trafficking along the U.S.-Mexico border. All right, turning now to Wall Street, where U.S. stocks are nearing their record highs again today. In afternoon trading, the S&P 500 rose more than 34 points. It is on track to surpass its all-time high from a couple of weeks ago. The Dow finished up 123 points. This continues a recent surge on the stock market amid excitement over Donald Trump's choice of Scott Bessent as Treasury Secretary. Many hope the hedge fund manager can help the new administration lower the deficit and improve the economy. Well, the halls of Congress are starting to see some new faces. The current session ends in a few weeks, but members of the 119th Congress are already gearing up for January 3rd, when they will officially be sworn in. The House will have over 60 new members who are now learning the ropes. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Well, it's great to be with you, Tracy. It's a rite of passage that happens every 2 years, and new member orientation is a lot like the first day of high school or even college. Dozens of new House lawmakers are learning how to navigate the Capitol and budget their time. They've been in a two-week crash course, from everything on how to write a bill to hiring staff to even filling out travel expenses, not to mention picking their offices. New lawmakers tell me it's a lot to take in.
I think there is a certain amount of concern about making sure I'm staying connected with the people who elected me. At the same time, I'm thousands of miles away, and I think that's going to be a real focus for us in the first few months.
It's very exciting. It's a huge honor, and it's starting to feel real to me.
Some are already talking about issues that they want to work on, like abortion.
I've always been pro-life. I do believe the exceptions need to be in place there. And so we you know, trying to find a way to... The problem with this issue so much is that you got people yelling on this side and yelling on that side.
When I was Under Secretary of Defense, we put in the reproductive health care policy. We allowed women to get contraceptives at our military treatment facilities on a walk-in basis.
Others say they're aiming for specific committee assignments.
I'm trying to get on the Appropriations Committee. I'm told as a freshman that's not possible, but you know, you miss all the shots you don't take, right? But I know that that'd be really important to my area in Northern Virginia.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is praising the new Republican class, over 30 currently, as several races wait to be called.
I'm really proud of this group. They have an extraordinary set of skills and expertise they bring to the table and life experiences. Pound for pound, I think it's one of the strongest classes maybe that's ever come in for our party.
New House members ended their two-week orientation with a class photo on the House steps. On the other side of the Capitol, 10 new lawmakers will join the Senate, including four Republicans, giving them control of the chamber.
Excited to be here. I'm glad that that I've been invited to the orientation, and excited to get to work for bringing about the change that the people of our great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania have demanded, and excited to get to work.
Well, Congress returns Monday for what amounts to be a three-week sprint to the end of the session. Most pressing issues: fund the government past December 20th, raise the debt ceiling, pass a National Defense Authorization Act, disaster relief, and extend farm programs. A lot to do to get done before lawmakers come back. And actually, they're supposed to do an omnibus bill that possibly is going to be voted on just before Christmas. But I'll have the latest from Capitol Hill. Tracy, I'll continue to follow it all.
We know you will. Thank you so much, Eric, and congratulations to them. Welcome to Washington. We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly. November, as we know, was primarily known for Thanksgiving, but there's something else it's known for in the Catholic world. Coming up, we discuss the beginnings and importance of Black Catholic History Month. Plus, the White House has its new Christmas tree, and we'll talk to the farmers who provided it and why they say it is a sign of resilience. I'm Welcome back. Arizona officials have certified the state's election results, including a measure expanding access to abortion. The new measure expands abortion access from 15 weeks to the point of fetal viability, also known as the time in which a baby can live outside the womb. The state still has other measures on the books regulating abortion access, which are expected to be challenged. Legal challenges to the new amendment are expected within days. And in Missouri, a judge says the state's ban on transgender surgeries and treatments for minors can remain in place. The Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act was signed into law last year. Next week, the Supreme Court is expected to take up a similar case out of Tennessee. Well, the month of November is known for many things, and here in the United States, it is also Black Catholic History Month. The initiative began back in 1990 to celebrate the long tradition and proud history of Black Catholics. Two major dates fall in this month, including the Feast of St. Martin de Porres on November 3rd. Born in Peru, he is the patron saint of mixed-race people and those seeking racial harmony. The other important date is the birthday of St. Augustine of Hippo, which tradition holds took place on November 13th. And for more, we turn now to Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, author and host of Beacon of Truth on EWTN Radio. Deacon Harold, always great to have you back on this show. So tell us a little bit more about Black Catholic History Month.
Yeah, so this is a wonderful celebration where we recognize the accomplishments and achievements of Black Catholics who, for many years, whose voices and accomplishments and achievements were not recognized in the life of the church. So this is a wonderful opportunity to take a pause and say, hey, look, let's take a look and reflect on how people of different cultural diversity and backgrounds have contributed to the vibrancy and the dynamism of the church in the United States.
Yeah, I want to look at those two important feast days in November. As we mentioned, one is dedicated to St. Martin de Porres. Tell us a little bit more about his life and his relation to Black Catholics.
Yeah, so St. Martin de Porres was born in Peru. He was born poor and he was Black. And so he wanted to enter religious life. And so he entered the Dominicans. But again, the Dominicans have some issues with his color. So he was kind of more like an oblate, and he was kind of the doorkeeper. So when people came to the monastery, he would be the first one that they would greet. He also had training as a nurse, if you will. He would help people that had with different ailments and things like that. And he also was known for his spiritual direction and his ability to bilocate. There were many times where people said, I was speaking with Martin over here. I said, oh, wait a minute. No, he was with me over here. You know, so he had this incredible, beautiful humility. He had such a beautiful soul and a life of service and a commitment and dedication to Jesus and the Catholic faith. So he's a wonderful witness that even in the midst of adversity and struggle, he was able to overcome that so that God's will and God's work can be done.
Yeah, and another thing I want to talk about, a really important part of history about Black Catholics, is this group called the Saintly Six. Tell us more about them.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Servant of God, Julia Greeley, Servant of God, Mother Mary Elizabeth Lang, and Servant of God, Sister Thea Bowman, and Venerable Father Augustus Tolton, and Servant of God, Mother Henriette DeLisle, and finally, Venerable Pierre Toussaint. These are six individuals that they're on the road, different levels right now on the road to canonization. They were incredible. And what I love about these six, most of them lived, except for Thea Bowman, lived during the 19th century, in the early 19th to late 19th century. This is the time of slavery and Jim Crow. But yet they were to overcome the obstacles and the block, even within the church herself. Like Henriette DeLisle founded a religious order because they wouldn't allow, the religious orders wouldn't allow a Black woman to become a sister. So she started her own order. You know, Venerable Pierre Toussaint was a hairstylist and used his money to set up a ministry for the poor. You know, so they were overcome. They didn't have a victim mentality. Instead, they said, look, we have these challenges, but we're going to overcome these challenges to make sure that God's work and will is going to be done despite the obstacles that we face. There's such a tremendous inspiration, not just to Black Catholics, but to every Catholic who wants to serve God with their whole heart, soul, mind, and strength.
Absolutely. Such wonderful examples for us all. Before I let you go, Do you have anything, any reflections for us on Black Catholic History Month?
Yes, I hope that we take the time to really reflect deeply on the contributions of Black Catholics. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, Tracy. My goal is that we get to a point in the life of the church where we won't have to celebrate Black Catholic History Month, because the idea of Black Catholics and all Catholics, whether they're Native American or Asian or Hispanic, that the contributions of people of color will be so woven into the fabric of our thinking as Catholics that we won't need to celebrate individual cultural months. It's just part of the whole part and parcel of what it means to be a Catholic in the United States.
Yeah, I love that. And that is really important. And hopefully that day comes soon. Deacon Harrell, great to be with you. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, as we approach the Christmas season, the story behind this year's White House Christmas tree, and you will not want to miss it. Officially welcomed its 18-foot-tall Christmas tree. Remember, First Lady Jill Biden received it yesterday right outside the executive mansion. The tree comes from Newland, North Carolina. And joining us now is Sam Carter, whose family owns the farm on which the tree grew. Sam, welcome. This is very exciting. So tell us, how did this come to be?
Well, thank you for having me. And it's a long process. A couple of things. We compete on a local level to get the opportunity to compete on a national level, and that takes about 2 years. And then at the national level, there are two rounds of judging, and you compete with about seven other categories of trees, as many as 30. And so it's not an easy process to be selected to provide the trees at the White House. We use a tree that's about, you submit a tree of about 8 feet for the competition, but then when you get selected to go to the White House, you have to offer up about six trees that are about 20 feet tall that they can select from. So it's not an easy process at all. And finally, not to belittle it, but the tree that's 20 feet tall is probably 25 years old. So you don't even think about when you plant that tree 25 years ago that it might be in the White House. And I'm hoping you're showing a picture of it, and the fact that we nicknamed this tree Tremendous because it represents what we're expecting, what we've experienced in the mountains of North Carolina during this terrible flooding and disaster we had from Hurricane Helene.
Yeah, we've been following that. Tell us what that means to you, your community, all that has gone through, and a tree from your farm, from your area, has been chosen to be in the White House. Talk to us about that.
When you ask me that question, I still get chill bumps. Telling you that our farm did not receive horrific damage. We received enough, but some farms lost homes and families, and they lost trees to market, and they lost other crops that they were growing, and some will never recover. And but what gives me chill bumps is the outpouring of goodwill from other people, other states around the country that sent in supplies. People came in and gave their time for people they didn't know to cut trees off their home and re-roof their houses and get mud out of their basements and just all those things that have to happen for recovery. And we want this tree not to represent partners, but we want it to represent all the people in Western North Carolina that have recovering from this flood. And we want it to represent all the good things of life that we've experienced, the generosity and faith, hope, love and family and joy. That's what we want this tree to represent.
Yeah, as I can hear even in the gratitude in your voice, too, when you express all of that. Sam, before I let you go, I know we were talking about the tree, but is there anything that you would like folks to know about your community, about North Carolina? And you mentioned everything they have gone through. What's your hope for your community going forward this holiday season?
That people will feel that hope and love, and they'll hold their families close, and we will recover. Everyone will recover. They have support from so many people, including their families. And if my community could feel anything, it's the love and that everybody's expressed to help them recover. That's what I would hope that they feel at this time, and I hope this tree represents.
Well, Sam, we continue to pray for you all there, and I hope you guys can feel that down there in North Carolina. Congratulations again on the tree, and God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me and all the people that have donated and supported Western North Carolina. And we still have a hard winter to go through, so don't forget us.
We will not. We're praying for you. Thank you so much, Sam. God bless. All right, finally tonight, it is the start of a four-day event at the Vatican, taking a closer look at the life and legacy of St. John Paul II. The goal is to help younger Catholics get to know one of the most popular church figures in recent memory.
Yes, so we're so proud to know that St. John Paul II declared him as one of our most illustrious alumni. And we know that he walked the same halls that our students walk today. And he studied the same fundamental truths that our students study today. So it's an incredible joy to know that his legacy will be renewed and walk with our students as they discover those truths in a new way and we apply them to the challenges of our times. For us, it's incredibly important to not only remember his story and his legacy, but know that he walks with us and he has so much to say to us today. In fact, perhaps his words are more actual now than ever.
Well, starting today, several universities will host conferences on the theme of faith and reason in the thought of John Paul II. The goal is to help students address the challenges of our modern world and help them to trust in the gift of reason to draw us closer to the faith. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night and God bless.